Good morning. Caps won last night. I'm not a real hockey fan, but I'd like to see a Washington team do well. So anyway, that was free. It wasn't in the notes. And speaking of the message, normally the way I do this is I use the slow cooker approach. Like, we know in advance, you know, several weeks out what our topic will be, the series, and then what the different themes will be. And normally what I'll do is I'll work on it along the way, chew on things, and then the week of, I'll put it all together. And this week I had a plan I was working on, and then an event happened, and I decided to change course. This is the same topic, but I'm using a different story. And I'll revisit the one I was planning on. I was going to tell the story of Esther in the Old Testament. But something else happened Tuesday. Southwest Flight 1380 happened. And it's interesting. Most of us, most of the time, our life doesn't show up in full relief. I mean, we can post something on Facebook and we kind of give a synopsis of what happened, or you can tell stories, but very few of us have all of a sudden everything we're doing is being known by a worldwide audience. And Tammy Jo Schultz, who was the captain of the flight, the way she handled herself, the way their team handled themselves, is pretty remarkable. And what I'd like to encourage, I'm going to tell some of the story because it illustrates the point today about this idea of each of us having our part on the team. I want to say this too. We don't have a lot of heroes and heroines right now. We've got a lot of celebrities, a lot of big names, a lot of people that make a big splash. I really think it'd be worth, when something like this happens and where you hear about someone, and I'm sure some of this you've already heard, but there's some behind the scenes things in her story that I think are compelling. And parents especially, I think it'd be good to don't just assume that your kids are picking up on what's going on. You need to help them. You need to help them understand the men and women, heroes and heroines in the Bible. I think it's really important. But then occasionally something like this happens. And again, in a celebrity world, there are a lot of people that get a lot of attention that quite honestly aren't the best examples. But then when something does happen like this, it'd be worth spending some time on and talking about the why. Why is this important? Why when they did this, why did it matter? And then the things that led up to it. I think you'll see this in Captain Schultz's story. It happened to Tuesday, kind of a routine flight, New York to Dallas, turned into something entirely different. It's 30,000 feet somewhere in there, and an engine blows. And pretty seriously, it throws shrapnel out instead of contained, which the way they're supposed to handle this one didn't work that way. Shrapnel's going a bunch of places. It ends up puncturing a window in the cabin. It depressurizes, and there was, of the 144, I think, passengers, there was one woman that was killed in that. The plane is diverted, and they're in very serious place. You've gone from two engines to one, and you've depressurized. You're trying to figure out, how do we survive this thing? You know, this is all the training kicks in at this point. And so NPR did an article on this, and when they were reporting, and I want to read to you some of the transcripts of what happened in this between Tammy Jo Schultz, who was the captain, and then air traffic control. And I want you to think about this. This is actually what was said. Some of you have heard the recordings on TV. Obviously, chaos has ensued when this happened. No one's expecting it. It's very, very rare. My wife Becky is. She doesn't like watching the news much because she feels everything she hears, and I just didn't want her to hear about this because I'm flying to Nashville in a few weeks. Anyway, and some of you are like that, quite honestly, men and women. I don't want to hear about it. It may be the safest way to travel, but, you know, so I'm not trying to freak anybody out, but I'm using this story because I think it fits. Captain Schultz was a Navy pilot, very accomplished, retired from the Navy, got involved with Southwest. And here's some snippets of the recording. Once she knew all this has happened, what are we going to do? She gets through air traffic control, and she says this, quote, Southwest 1380 has an engine on fire descending. Air traffic control responds, You're descending right now? Yes, sir, we're single engine descending. Fire in engine one, which was on the pilot side, which would be the left side of the plane. This next part really is fascinating. It says, so the air traffic controller said, all right, Southwest 1380, where would you like to go? And then the response from Captain Schultz is very simple. It says, the closest one, three words, which, duh, I mean, I'm not a pilot, but I would have assumed that would have been the proper response. Ends up Philadelphia was going to be the closest one. Captain Schultz goes on to say, the fire is out, but we've got some other problems. And then there's several back and forth. There were several air traffic controllers that she was talking to, finally latched on to one as they decided to go to Philadelphia. But after every one of her comments, it said here, she signed off by saying, good day. Here's something to hang on to. If you're in any kind of leadership position, and Sully Sullenberger, who is the one that he took a big plane and turned it into a float plane on the Hudson a few years back. You remember that story? Ran into some birds or something. He said, the thing is when you're in the pilot or in any time in your leadership position, internally, you may be freaking out. Externally, that's not important. What's important is, what does the mission require right now? And the mission required staying on task, going through what do we need to do when this, they've trained, they've got all kind of training, and you've got to be careful. And not just what you say, but your tone of voice matters. Parents in the home, there may be things going on, you need to be careful. It's not that you're being dishonest, you're staying on task. Any kind of leader, sometimes we in our culture, we get this idea that, gee, if I feel it, I should tell everybody. That is immature and foolish and really dangerous. Captain Schultz, we don't know all that she was feeling. What we do know is she understood she had a responsibility, and right now what was required was to stay on task for the sake of everyone involved. And she does a phenomenal job of it. She goes on and she's talking. She says, quote, we have a part of the aircraft missing, so we're going to need to slow down a bit. It's such understatement to me. They've been going 500 miles an hour, whatever they do, and she's going to slow down because you got one engine. There's all kind of problems with the depressurization. She goes on to say, she asked for medical personnel to meet the plane at the runway to help with injured passengers. Air traffic control. Injured passengers, okay. And is your plane physically on fire? He says, no, it's not on fire, but part of it is missing. After a brief period of silence, she adds, they said there's a hole and someone went out. Air traffic controller hears this and immediately says this, I'm sorry, you say there's a hole, someone went out? Not appropriate at the time, but you can imagine that's what, this is not regular data. And immediately what happens, they get back on task, and without waiting for her to answer, Southwest 1380 says, doesn't matter, we'll work it out. Their airport's just off to your right, report when you see it. Next thing you hear her say is, in sight. It's a study of discipline. It's a study of just leadership in the moment where it was needed. It's really a remarkable thing. Her training, she joined the Navy. From the time she was a little girl, she wanted to be a pilot. And I'm not busting on the Air Force, but at the time when she went to the Air Force, they said, it's probably not going to work for you. We're not going to let women fly combat planes. The Navy said, we will. She got to be part of a tactical wing. She got to fly F-18s and Prowler. I mean, she never was in combat, but she got very, very skilled with combat planes and became a trainer of pilots. And when she retired from the Navy, she went to Southwest, which is actually, she and her husband both are former Navy pilots. Both of them work with Southwest. It's interesting, the pilots, her husband, his brother-in-law, Gary Schultz, was interviewed. There, you can imagine all these people are being interviewed, and they ask him, can you tell us anything about your sister-in-law? And he goes, well, my brother said she's the best pilot he knows. That's not only a wise husband, I've known a lot of pilots, they're not given to exaggeration. Pretty cool. We're going to learn a little bit more about her in a bit. One of the things I want to point out here is that she is getting a lot of credit, and she should. She was in charge. She was the captain of this enterprise as they're going and trying to figure out how do we deal with something that's completely out of the norm and we have training for it, but again, it's all got to kick in and be in gear now. A lot of attention and praise, and I'm glad about that. I hope, and you'll learn a lot more about it, but this really was a team effort. The fact that she gets the credit for it, that she's getting the notoriety, is right, but there's more to the story than that. This is what her and her first officer have said. His name is Darren Elliser. They're not granting media interviews, but this is what they have said through a statement they released. Said, "We were simply doing our jobs. Our hearts are heavy. On behalf of the entire crew, we appreciate the outpouring of support from the public and our co-workers as we all reflect on one family's profound loss." Rather than focusing on getting attention, they're thinking about that one woman, a 43-year-old mother of two, that was killed when the window next to her blew out. There was a heroic effort to try to save her, but it was just too late. But this is what they're focusing on now. We lost someone. Goes on to say, "We joined our company today in focused work and interviews with investigators. We are not conducting media interviews. I am sure there's some protocol to that, but you know, in a culture where people can't get enough publicity, it's pretty refreshing for someone to say right now, that's not appropriate. We're not going to do interviews. We're focused on figuring out what happened. How can we learn from this? What can we do? Put your attention on the other issues that are here." Being part of a team, I'm just going to mention a few, and I'm not a pilot, but these are some of the ones that as you read the stories, you're going to hear. These people played a really important role. Obviously, you have Tammy Jo Schultz. She's the captain. You had the co-captain or the first officer there. You also have the flight attendants. The flight attendants had a key role. They're there with all these passengers, and I'll tell you about flight attendants. Most of us don't pay any attention to them unless we want another drink or we want a pillow or something. Most people don't look at them when they're doing the training about what happens if something, you know, in the air. And all these pictures of the people putting the mask on wrong, I guarantee the rest of the week, people were really paying attention. Oh, so it goes on over your nose too. I mean, we just take all that for granted. But here they are right on the scene, and they're trying to help people, calm them down, help them know what to do. It was really pretty remarkable effort. You have the maintenance crew, and you have maintenance people both before and after, but you also have people that are trying to help them understand. So did the shrapnel injure any of our controls? They're all kind of hydraulics here, and they don't expect the shrapnel to fly out of the engine when that fan blade broke, but it created all kind of problems. And so you've got people helping them trying to think mechanically. You've got the ground crew. You've got fire and rescue. Other pilots in the area, they're changing what they're doing. They're offering help and advice. I mean, this really was a team effort. It's fine for someone to take the bulk of the spotlight, but we need to make sure that we don't just profile that one person as if it was all on them. And the picture here, this is the way the church should be. It's where all of us are part of this team Jesus has coalesced. And that what we do, whenever we're successful together. And whenever there's a problem, we have a problem that we deal with together. Where it's not, you know, there are the few really important people and then there are the little people. Like right now, some of the most important people in this building right now are working with our little kids. We had to close down two classrooms at 9. We ran out of room in them. We didn't kick anybody out, but we had to shuffle some. So we were maxed out, and we got volunteers. I leave usually, and I go talk to our people that are working with the kids. All our volunteers show up, which is wonderful, because we need volunteers there. We don't want any family to have their child here and not be cared for. Some of you, when you go pick up your kids, if you don't know the name of who's been watching, ask them and thank them. You got parking team. Now, it's hard to feel sorry for the parking team today. This is like, wow, this is like a great day to recruit. But they're out there in really lousy weather, too. And the thing is it's not just a do-nothing deal. We have very few accidents. That's not the point. Their point is to make sure that things go well. If there's a problem, they'll know it. And for first-time guests to know that they're welcome and to have a place to come, and they're the first face people see. It's really important. You know, we have people that are doing our refreshments, our coffee and tea and all that. But I mean, there's so many parts. We have security. You don't even see our security people much. But they work really hard. They've been planning right now. There's been a lot of things that have happened in churches. And so our security team's been working behind the scenes and trying to be prepared for whatever could happen. But they want to do it in an unobtrusive way. We don't want to walk around with people with, you know, AKs and, you know, and camo, you know, trying to intimidate anybody. That's not our intent. But we do want to be careful. We want to be prepared. And so they're doing this, and they're all volunteers. Everything we do is important. And this idea of being part of team, Jesus' team is his church. And every one of us is invited to be part of his team. We're going to be looking at today. He invites anyone to be on it. There's no level of, gee, that's a really important person I'd like on my team, and then there's these people. It's everyone is invited, and they come in exactly the same way. This is how Jesus describes it. And I'm going to use the term follower a lot because Jesus never used the term Christian. That was actually coined about 15 years later. He used the term follower. That was his favorite term. And listen to what he said. There's a big crowd that had been following, and he knew some of them followed just because he could do miraculous kind of things, and he was healing and all this. And he knew there were some people that were just kind of following the show. He never did any of that as a show. When you read about the miracles, I have no problem with him being able to do that. He's God. But he never did it as a sideshow. He did it to capture people's attention, to tell them what was really important. So here he is. He's got this big crowd. He said to the crowd, if any of you wants to be my follower, so he's an invitation, if any of you want to, you must turn from your selfish ways, take up your cross daily and follow me. He's being real clear about this. I want you on my team, but understand this, it's my team. And if you join my team, I am now in charge. And understand that before you get in. You follow me, I don't follow you. Some of us, if we analyzed our prayer, I've been caught up doing this before, where it's like I'm trying to inform God to lobby him to my position. He is uniquely uninterested in that. He doesn't want me to try to talk him into my point of view. He wants me to follow him. And so Jesus is saying, turn from your selfish ways. Whenever the Bible talks about sin, that's really the essence of it, is I want what I want, when I want it, how I want it. That's selfishness, self-centeredness. And he's saying, you need to be willing to turn from that. You need to be willing, instead of going your way, you're now following me. Take up your cross daily. The idea here is that the cross was just a means of putting things to death. It just meant I'm willing to sacrifice my way for him, to go his way. And actually, to become a follower of Jesus means I'm admitting that going my way has got me in trouble. My self-centeredness has got me in trouble. I'm going to now be Jesus-centered. I'm going to follow him. And it's not a set it and forget it. It means that daily I need to regularly put aside and put to death my self-centered ways and trust him that he's got my best interest at heart, and wherever he leads me, it's going to be absolutely the best. Turn from your selfish ways, take up your cross daily, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you'll lose it, he said. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world, but are yourself lost or destroyed? So Jesus gives this invitation. He wants everyone to be part of his church, but they need to understand it's his church, not mine. It's his team, not mine. And now I follow him. And he's not interested at all in whether your age, your track record, your experience, your skills, your talents, and all that. He recognizes that those exist, but he said, I want you as you are. Now, there'll be changes that come along, but you come as you are and join my team. And if there's anyone here that's not yet, if you're watching or if you're here live and you've not made a commitment to follow Jesus, I would love to talk to you about it. Catch me after the service, or you can put it in the communication card when we take up the offering. I mean, this is the greatest offer ever, but it's one that we have to make a decision to. It doesn't just happen automatically. I make a decision. I'm going to follow him. All of us that have, though, I want you to think about this question. This is what we'll look at the rest of this message. What kind of teammate am I? If I'm on Jesus' team, I'm part of his church. And when I use the term church, there's the universal church and then there's the local church. The universal church, anyone that has become a follower of Jesus is part of his church, but he expects us to be part of local groupings of it, branch offices, if you want to call it. New Hope's one of the branch offices. So what kind of teammate am I? And more than just my own opinion is, what would Jesus say? What would he say about what kind of teammate am I on his church? So I want to look at this from, I want to do the contrast. Now in your notes, and I'll explain, we've got some equipment failure here. I got two columns. We're going to look at this idea of fan, and the other is going to be follower, but yours says fan and fan. We put it in right in the copy machine and it just changed it. I don't know what happened, but we have disciplined the copying machine. We poured molasses into the toner thing and it's learned its lesson. It'll never do that again. So you can scratch out the second fan, the one that would be on this side. What is that? You're right. And write follower. And then afterwards, I'll tell you about what you can send emails to the copy machine to correct it. But just real quick, let's just look at the difference between a fan and a teammate or a follower. Fans are spectators. They love watching. They like seeing what's going on, but they like to do it from a safe and comfortable position. They like to be observers. Followers are players. They're on the field. They're actually involved. They're the ones that are sweaty and bleeding and all this kind of stuff. And they're actively engaged in what's going on. Fans tend to like a team. In this case, there are plenty of fans of the church. But again, it's from a distance. I like what I see. And we'll see in a minute what happens when you don't like what you see. Followers, they don't like, they love. I mean, they are not just appreciative of what's going on, but they're actively concerned and deeply involved in everything that's going on in the church. Fans of the church are, comfort is their number one goal. They'll participate as long as it doesn't interfere with their other priorities, and the church is not a high priority. It's they will say, oh, it's a priority, but when you really look at it, it's a much lower priority in their life. Whether it's giving or serving and all that kind of stuff, it's when it's convenient. And sure, don't pin me down on anything because other things might come up. I like to leave my options open. That's the way fans operate. But followers are committed. They've made Jesus' church, this team that they're now part of, they've made it a priority, and that shows up in their daily life. It shows up. You could take their bank statement. You can see, boy, the church is important to them. That team is number one priority. Or look at their calendar and they can see how they wrap. They don't just say, you can count on me if I'm around. It's, you can count on me and now I'll work my life around these commitments that I've made because it's really important. When they serve on a team, they show up early, leave late because they want to make sure it's done well and right because they realize they're part of a mission that's worth it. Fans like to critique and they have no problem pointing out flaws and weaknesses and all that because they're at a distance. They don't have any dog in the hunt, so to speak. And that explains, too, why, especially in large metro areas, people do a lot of church hopping. I like to go to this one, but it's kind of like restaurants. You know, I used to hear of it, they got a new chef. I don't really care about that. I won't go here. And so it's just this kind of mentality of I'll critique and I'll just do what I feel like. Whereas followers in the church, teammates in the church, they are even more about critiquing, but they're looking because they want to say, are we really getting it done the way we should? Are we doing the best we can? And when they point out things that are problems, they roll their sleeves up and say, what are we going to do to fix this? Not what are they going to do? And not, I'm out of here because I just don't, you know, I don't, the temperature, the room, like right now, it's just too hot. I'm going to go to a church where they set the temperature down at least 4 more degrees. I'm going to take my thermometer. I'm going to find a church that feels good. I mean, and it sounds silly, but people do this all the time. And the last one is fans tend to be emotion-fueled. How I feel right now determines how I'm going to act. That's why the national average in the United States right now, a growing, affluent culture, is where church attendance, church giving, and church serving has diminished significantly among the average people that would say they're parts of the church. They're really more fans than anything else. The church thrives, though, on people that are devotion-fueled, devotion-driven, where it's not a matter of how I feel right now. It's a matter of what I believe is really important, what is right. What does Jesus want me to do? Where does he want me deployed? And I'm going to do whatever I can to make things right. And if relationships go squirrely, I'm going to work it out. I'm going to pray. I'm going to be involved. I'm going to be invested in this. That's the difference between a fan and a follower. Another way to picture the church is Romans 12. It talks, using the illustration of the human body, says, just as our bodies have many parts, and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. If you have made a commitment to follow Jesus, we belong to each other. I had to have surgery last summer on my meniscus. I don't even know what a meniscus is, but apparently when it's not working right, everything feels it. I'd jump, I'd do certain weightlifting things. I couldn't, my meniscus was just not working right. So I had to go in, kind of like we did the copier, they removed part of it. You know, go in there and trim it away, whatever they do. The fact is that that one little part wasn't doing its job. The rest of me felt the impact of it. And that's the way it is with Jesus' church. When all the parts are working together, there's strength, there's vitality, we're able to accomplish things. But when some say, I'm not going to be a part of that, I don't want to do that, then all of a sudden things shift around. It doesn't work well. Let me give you an example from Flight 1380. The pilot has a very important role, the most visible role, the one that's getting a lot of it, the primary attention right now. But let's just say, what if the first officer, the co-pilot, what if this happened, the engine blows, and the first officer starts freaking out? Oh, no, we're going to crash. This is horrible. You know, and just kind of flailing his arms around in the cockpit. And now the captain's not only got a one-engine plane trying to deal with, but now they got this person here that's supposed to be a teammate that's freaking out. Now they got to figure out, how do I take him out so I can do my job? What are we, you know, you can see what happens. Avoiding the training and just, whoa. You could see, what if the flight attendants had done it? What if they discovered later on, and again, I'm speculating, it has nothing to do with any reality, I'm just saying what if. What if they find that there was a maintenance worker, either for Southwest or for GE, that had just, inspecting these engines, it's really a lot of work. There are a lot of fan blades in these things. This one looks pretty good, and plus, nothing ever happens to them, so I'm just going to check this one off and say it's fine. What if that had happened? Huge problems. What if the air traffic controller had decided, you know what, I'm going to take a longer lunch today. They'll do fine without me. There's not much happening. They all know how to carry it. I'll be fine. And so they just kind of skip out for a couple hours. And then all of a sudden, Captain Schultz is trying to find someone to help. Small thing. Huge impact. Some of you might think about this. You think about the church, well, they don't really need me because I'm not that important. Like, they take up the offering. There are people here who got a lot more money than me, so I'm just going to back off. Or I'm not going to join in to serve, or I'm not going to be part of things. You know, the thing is if we're not careful, we can take a liberty personally that ends up affecting the whole team. And we haven't thought it through. And Jesus says, I want you to think about it. We belong to each other. And so that's why we need to work on relationships and make them right when they go south. That's why we need to go out of our way to help each other. Belonging means that we live and we give and we serve together. That all of us, we're all in. That living together means that we're part of groups together in small groups, or and even beyond that, where we're in people's family rooms, they're in ours, where we really do get to know each other. We come alongside and support and help each other. Where we, again, the giving part, that's just a normal part of any healthy organization. And then the serving, I'm willing to volunteer wherever I'm needed. Because I just want to know, where's the biggest need and how can I help? Because that's what you do when you're part of a team. Listen to what it says in Hebrews 10. I love this. It says, in response to all Jesus has done for us, let us outdo each other in being helpful and kind to each other and in doing good. If we took this to heart, we would not leave this room today, because a couple of you will get to the door first and you'll say, oh, I need to put others before me. And no one will go through the door because they're all thinking, oh, no, others need to go before me. We just sit here and starve to death. But we tend to think about, what do I deserve? Not how can I do for the sake of others. It doesn't happen at a distance. It happens with a commitment. And I want to close with something about Captain Schultz, that this showed up in Christianity Today. And we'll probably hear some more of this. She and her husband live in Bernie, Texas, which is just outside of San Antonio. It's a small town. When members of her church, First Baptist of Bernie, heard the recordings of the flight control, they said, oh yeah, that's Tammy Jo. We hear her all the time. We know her well. Now, this is interesting. They have now gone back to her town, and they're interviewing people that know her. She didn't have a chance to go back and adjust her persona or her public record. This is all happening because of what happened on that flight on Tuesday. Her good friend Stacy Thompson said, Tammy Jo has been a key part of our church for years and years. She's led the children's worship program. She's taught Sunday school for children, middle schoolers, high school, and adults. She's been deeply committed to what we do here. She's really well known. Her biggest goal, and Ms. Thompson has talked to her since all this happened, said her biggest goal has been she just wants to live in such a way that people would be interested to find out more about Jesus. She wants to live so they'll be attracted to him through how she's lived her life. She said that Schultz has done this and evidenced this in a lot of ways, not just how she served in the church, but in all kind of ways to try to be a show up as a follower of Jesus to people around. She's helped after hurricanes. She's gone and helped victims there. She's worked with widows. She takes care of a younger sister that's got a disability. She's taken care of her husband's mother. I mean, they just say this is just the way she is. This is how she lives her life. The Dallas Morning News, and you know what it's like, the news folks, when we go find out, let's do background, let's find out more of what we can. So they go to Bernie, Texas to find out more about Ms. Schultz. And this is what they came out in Christianity Today says. It sounded like they were kind of bewildered by her. This is the quote from the Dallas Morning News. Quote, "It seems that nearly everyone in Bernie has a Tammy Joe story. And taken together, they paint a picture of a woman almost too impossibly caring, too impossibly devoted to her community." How would you like to have something like that said about you? That just kind of happened along the way. You weren't sitting around doing personal branding. You weren't trying, one day, there's going to be all kind of scrutiny about me. I better go ahead and plan it now. This is how she's lived her life. I'm just saying she's a genuine follower of Jesus from everything I can tell. And the way she's lived it, when they come back and investigate it, they're finding more and more evidence to it. That's how you and I ought to be living. That's how teammates in Jesus Church operate. And so when people want to come investigate, they say, well, what's the evidence? Well, I really like what I see here. Her friend went on to say, because she has talked to her several times, and you know, she's not giving interviews. Tammy Jo wants people to know that God was there with her, that he helped her getting control of that plane and landing it. It was because of him, not her. She was just a teammate and a co-captain. He was the captain. This is how you and I get to live. And when we do, we may never make it in the Dallas Morning News or The View or any one of these other shows, but there'll be people in our sphere of influence say, I want to find out about the captain of your team. I want to be part of this. So the question is, what kind of teammate am I? And what can I do to raise the bar? Let's pray. Father, we're really grateful for Ms. Schultz and that she was the one on the scene at the time and she was able to protect as many lives as she did. We grieve with the family that lost a wife and a mother and know that having all this publicly has probably been really difficult for them to deal with. We pray that you would comfort them and that you would just care for that family for the long haul. We're grateful that Ms. Schultz has lived as a follower and that her story is going to be told. We pray that you would help her to navigate all the attention that she gets, she and her family get, and they would handle it well, and they would have the kind of support they need to walk through this and keep themselves grounded. And help us to learn from her example and from the examples around us of people that really live this devotion to you as followers out. And help us to decide that we're going to raise the bar in our own lives. We ask this in Jesus' name and for his sake. Amen.